All right, everybody, officially good morning to a topic that you don't see every day on a real estate forum, do you? What we're going to talk about today is something I've wanted to talk about for quite a while now, but until now I really didn't have the right person to join me. I figured that, I guess I kind of always wanted to tell you about my journey, but since I don't have any real credentials, I figured my story might not make the impression that I want to make, and I'll explain what I mean by that here in a little bit. But there are several people on the call who actually know me fairly well, and you know that I have issues with food. Now, by issues, I don't think I mean psychological issues, but what I mean is that for most of my life, on some level, food has, and this is a little melodramatic, but food has been the enemy. I eat and I hurt. I eat and I hurt. Most of my life, I've had a stomachache, pretty much all the time. And up until about 1996, I truly believed that having an aching gut was just simply a part of the human experience, that everyone's stomach hurt, and there really wasn't anything you could do about it or expect to do about it. It was just part of being a human being. I also, probably like some of you, struggled with my weight. I was never obese or overweight to the point of being unhealthy, but for most of my adult life, I weighed 15 to 20 pounds more than I do now, and I was very unhappy about that. I tried diets and exercise and all the stuff that we quote-unquote know will help you lose weight, but nothing ever worked to my satisfaction. Then, one day, in 1996, my husband at the time decided to try the Atkins diet, the high-protein, low-carb. Now, I was skeptical and not at all interested, but in less than a week, he'd lost 7 pounds. Well, I thought that was pretty neat, pretty inspiring, so I jumped on the bandwagon with him, and my life at that point changed forever. I did lose weight, but what was more life-changing than that for me was that for the first time in my life, my stomach didn't hurt. I mean, all day long, I felt good. I had a lot of energy. I had more energy than I'd ever had. My clothes were actually comfortable all day long. I didn't have that I feel fat feeling that I'd lived with as long as I could remember, whether I was or wasn't. I always felt like I was. I just felt, look, I mean, I'm sure a lot of you can relate. Now, this show is not about going on a low-carb diet, although that might be the solution for some of you. It's not about even really about losing weight, although what you take away from the show today will certainly do that for you if you need to lose weight. Our show today is about realizing how important and how powerful food is to your health and how you can change your life dramatically by changing your diet. Okay, let me continue with my story for a few more minutes, and then I'll bring Elizabeth on. Okay, so here we are back in 1996. I was on the Atkins diet. I lost weight. I felt great. Wonderful. Okay, neato frito, right? Well, that was just the beginning of a very long journey that is still continuing today. It turns out that I was sensitive to wheat products. So when the Atkins diet eliminated that for me, because wheat products are high carb, my health improved dramatically. But I didn't make the connection at the time, and I eventually went back to eating a more normal American diet, which included wheat products and processed food. My health deteriorated, and I felt fat again. As I got older, it got much worse, and I did start to make the connection between certain types of food and both my weight and my health. I realized that I was very sensitive to not just wheat, but also soy, which are two ingredients that are in almost every food in your pantry. If you go look in your pantry right now, just about everything in there has either wheat or soy or both. I eliminated both wheat and soy with some serious effort, because that's hard to do, and I did get better. I got much better, but I still had more bad days than good days. At this point, I had made the clear connection between what I ate and how I felt, but I couldn't for the life of me identify exactly what made me feel bad and, perhaps more importantly, what foods were safe for me to eat. I got to the point several times where I investigated the possibility of living on a liquid diet, and I remember one time even doing some research on whether it's possible to live without eating at all, you know, just taking supplements. I was so tired of hurting and the inconvenience of it all. Every single time I ate, I hurt. As I got older, it got to the point where I didn't just hurt that day. I would hurt for days and then weeks. I mean, it was awful. I also spent a lot of money trying to figure out what was wrong, thousands of dollars, tens of thousands probably, looking for a solution, even just looking for the problem, which nobody could identify for me. Okay, so fast forward to last September. My friend Sue came to visit me at the beach, and of course anyone who comes to visit me has to deal with my dietary issues. And some people are more interested in them than others, but if you come visit me and stay with me, you're going to deal with, you know, my food issues. So anyway, Sue and I were talking about them, and she just made the offhand comment, well, I'm so glad I don't have that problem. I can eat anything I want. Well, Sue's an adult human being, so I took her at her word. I didn't argue with her or push her on that at all. But for whatever reason, during her stay, she became intrigued with the wheat-free, gluten-free part of my routine. And I'm not sure why, but she just said, or she decided that she was going to give that a try. Okay. So a week later, she'd lost, I think, 9 pounds and was feeling wonderful. She had the same experience I had back in 96. She hadn't realized she'd been hurting. She just thought how she felt was how she was supposed to feel. But once she cut the wheat out of her diet, she discovered a whole new meaning to the words, I feel good. Not to mention the weight that dropped off and stayed off. And I think she had some other issues that improved dramatically as well. Then over the holidays, she caved in and ate some Christmas cookies and was immediately reminded how she'd felt before and what a difference being wheat-free made. I remember talking to her how miserable she was. Okay, so where am I going with this? Well, I don't know really. So I'm going to bring on my guest who can speak more credibly and coherently on the subject of food sensitivities and such issues than I can. Elizabeth Yarnell is a Denver-based therapist who I connected with this last fall to deal, hopefully, once and for all with my food problems. I hate to say that she was a last resort, but that's how I was feeling at the time. Now that I've gone through her program, I can't believe that I didn't do it sooner, but we're not here to push her program at all. It's a fairly big financial and lifestyle commitment, and one that took me 15 years to be willing to make. But I think what she has to say is so powerful that it can change your life, whether or not you ever talk to her again. In fact, if this real estate writing gig doesn't work out for me, I'd love to do what she does, because it truly does change lives more significantly than probably anything I'll ever say ever will. So, formally, Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Let me just tell you a little bit about Elizabeth. I keep talking about how she has, you know, more credibility than I do, so let me tell you about her. She's an author and an inventor, a culinary instructor, and a natural health expert, which I think you'll figure that one out on your own here in a little bit. She calls herself a naturopathic health counselor, which I love the sound of that. It basically means that you take a look at the big picture of somebody before you recommend solutions for their healing. I'm going to let her tell you her story here in a little bit. She's coming from a different place than I have. She had chronic health issues, but they weren't necessarily, you know, a stomach ache. She had some other things that might affect some of you.
Thank you, Jennifer, for sharing that, because I have to say there's probably, up to 30% of the population in this country alone who believe that something is causing them to feel sick but can't pinpoint it. And then they become accustomed to living this kind of lower level of vitality type existence like you were living, where you think that, well, this is normal. Everybody feels this way. Everybody gets a migraine once a week. Everybody has diarrhea this frequently or constipation. Everybody maybe has these kind of itchy skin problems or whatever it is that you're dealing with that is lowering your quality of life and your health. And you kind of accept it and be like, well, maybe even if everybody doesn't, this is my normal. And so I was really thrilled to have you come to see me and get into this program, because discovering this, and I'll talk about what I'm talking about when I say this, has been life-changing for me too. So I'll start with my story. In 1999, I went to sleep one night. I was 29 years old, and I woke up the next morning after going to sleep totally fine. I woke up blind in my right eye, and it turned out I had multiple sclerosis. And I thought, oh, wow. First of all, I didn't really know what it was, and then I learned that it was a degenerative autoimmune nervous system disease that really there was no cure for. And here I was looking down this endless road of my life, and what it looked like for a multiple sclerosis person is a very high likelihood, over 80%, that I would end up in a wheelchair at some point, probably within 20 years. And I thought, oh, this really, really is not how I pictured my future being. I was just about to get married. I had just finished graduate school. We had just bought a fixer-upper. All of these things were going on in my life, and the last thing that I needed to do was to transfer into a wheelchair and be disabled. And I thought, okay, well, what can I do? And all the doctors said, well, really, all you can do is go on these injectable therapies. And I thought, well, that makes me feel very helpless. What can I do to help myself, my body, feel better? Because really, it matters the most to me, right, how my quality of life is, how my body is feeling. So I started to research into the connection between diet and health, and I thought, okay, well, you know what? How can you possibly be healthy if the food that you're putting into your body isn't able to assimilate and absorb the nutrients into your body? So you're going to be chronically deficient. It's going to show up in a lot of different ways. Things are going to happen and it's not going to make sense until you realize that your body can't possibly be healthy if they're not getting the nutrients they need. The human body is a whole system of chemical reactions, and it needs those chemicals to make it all happen. So at this point, I thought, okay, what can I do to bring better food into my body? Like you, I had tried fad diets, Atkins. There was an all-carb, no-protein phase in the 80s. There were all kinds of the grapefruit diet, the cabbage soup diet, all that stuff. Not necessarily always to lose weight, although certainly sometimes, because my weight did bounce up and down by 30 pounds, believe it or not. So sometimes it was, but sometimes it was just to try to be healthier in whatever that might be at that time, more oatmeal, red wine, who knows what they were saying at the time. So I thought, okay, well, let me see what I can find out about what it really means to eat a healthy diet. And I looked and I started researching, and I researched through the Mayo Clinic and the ADA and all sorts of respected health organizations. And at the end, what I really realized that if you synthesize all of this information together, the answer for the general public really comes down to whole foods. And if you eat a whole foods diet, then you will automatically usually be healthier than somebody who eats all processed foods that are denatured and have no nutritional value. So I thought, okay, and at that point I thought, well, but I don't know how to cook, and how am I going to eat a whole foods diet? So I started taking cooking classes and watching the Food Network, and I ended up inventing a method of cooking whole foods that was very easy. That's where my cookbook came from, Glorious One-Pot Meals. So I invented this method using a cast-iron Dutch oven. And for a while I thought, well, maybe this is the answer to health, and everybody really just needs to eat whole foods. Well, as time went on and I did get healthier and I felt much, much better and my weight stabilized, all these things happened. But at the same time, my son was very sick, and he was sick really since birth. When I was 9 months pregnant with him, my neighbor threw me a baby shower, which was so nice of her, and unfortunately one of the foods that was served was tainted with listeria. So I had to be hospitalized and injected with IV antibiotics for about a week while I had this 9-month-old fetus inside me. And when he was born, he never really had a strong digestive system, and he was very sick, didn't sleep through the night until he was 4, projectile vomiting all the time, combined with chronic constipation that would be terrible. I mean, it was poor child. He was just miserable and in pain. His stomach hurt him all the time. He would wake up in the middle of the night screaming his stomach hurt him so badly. So I would go to all the doctors. We went to the clinics at Children's, all these things, and they all said the same thing. Well, you need to give him chronic laxatives, constant laxatives, to help him with the constipation. And I thought, you know what? The one thing I know for sure is he's not deficient in laxatives. That's not the answer. But, of course, we did it for a couple years, and it didn't help. Even with the laxatives, he wouldn't poop sometimes for 10 days. Now, for a growing kid, and if you know about how the body works with excretion, when you excrete things through your stool, that's all the garbage, all the toxins that's coming out of your body. And if it sits in your colon for a very long time, as it does for many of us, it can, all those toxins absorb back into your body, and you can become toxic, and eventually you'll die sooner. So I thought, okay, this is really desperate. And I ended up at a naturopath who introduced us to this test from Signet. And what this test is, it's called a mediator release test. And it looks at it takes a sample of blood and it tests it against 150 common foods and food additives that are all over our food supply and finds out if those stimuli make the blood release inflammatory responses. And so we did this, and the results came back for my son, and it turned out he was sensitive to 41 foods and chemicals. And I thought, oh, 41, and no wonder we had taken wheat out, we had taken milk out, we had taken soy out, all these common food issues, and nothing had helped for him. Well, there were so many more that were bothering him that we would have had no idea about. Some of the common things that were so surprising to find on his test were that he was sensitive to broccoli, one of his favorite foods. He was such a good eater. To honey, something that we think of as very natural, to oranges, to lemons, citrus basically, celery. Who would have thought someone could be sensitive to celery?
I turned out to be sensitive to celery too, and I ate it all the time. I thought it was one of my safe foods.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So once we were able to build a new diet for him out of safe foods, it was amazing. His recovery, within 2.5 months, he had gained 15 pounds. Before this, he had fallen off the bottom of the weight chart. If you have kids, you know what that weight chart means to you. So he gained 15 pounds and grown 2.5 inches. It was it was like seeing somebody finally start absorbing nutrients. And their body was just booming. His attitude changed. His mood was happier. He started singing to himself, something he had never done. He was kind of a dark, moody, black mood person before this. And now he was happy. Well, no wonder he wasn't in pain anymore. It was so much more comfortable for him to live and to have this existence. And it made me really aware of how much the food, when he eats something that he shouldn't, how tremendously it impacts his behavior, his attitude, his all sorts of self-control issues that we see often in kids, and instead we throw medications like Ritalin or something at them. But often it can just be controlled. With my son, when he has a certain red food dye, which is in almost everything marketed to kids, unfortunately, but when he has that, a couple things will happen. If it's on an empty stomach, he will throw up within 20 minutes. If it's on a full stomach, it will stay in his stomach, but within 5 to 7 hours, he will become an evil, evil person. Evil. Start literally just spewing abuse out of his mouth. Oh, I hate you. You're a mean person. I don't ever want to see you again. I mean, this is out of an 8-year-old's mouth. It's, you know, of course, age appropriate. But and then it'll pass once the food dye works its way through his system. But I can see that it's causing an inflammatory reaction to happen in his brain, which is affecting his behavior, his mood, everything. So this for me was life, and this for our whole family, I have to say, was life-changing. It just, life became so much better, not just for him, but for everyone around him. His schoolwork started soaring. Everything got better. So I thought, well, I want to see if I can offer this in my naturopathic practice. So I went and I became certified, and in delivering this test and designing this dietary management therapy. And since I've done this and I've opened up my practice to clients, I have just seen stories like yours, Jennifer, people who never thought that they, almost not that they didn't deserve to be pain-free in their life, but didn't think it was possible.
Well, you know, I actually didn't finish my story. I kind of stopped and...
I know. I have a note saying, let's hear what Jennifer has to say for the rest, so go ahead.
I don't want to be the one to talk, but I do. And again, you know, we're not here to push a program at all, but it really, anyway, we'll get to that later. And I've had some questions coming in already. What is it she does? What is it she does? We'll get to that later. The punchline to my story is that I think it was right before Thanksgiving was when I ponied up, I think it's like $1,000 or something, to do the blood test and to get, you know, to have Elizabeth as your pound. I don't know, something like that. That's about right? $1,100
Well, it depends on
what you
sign up
yeah.
for.
Okay, but that's how much I came up with. And I finally did it right before Thanksgiving. I had the blood test done. Mine came back surprising stuff. I mean, there were some things that were off the chart reactive for me. Corn was one of them, which I didn't realize. Peanuts, cashews, you know, some normal things, celery, green peppers. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But there were, you know, quite a few foods that I was eating on a regular basis, whey, that were keeping me sick, even though I had cut wheat and soy out of my diet. But there were all these other things that were keeping me inflamed. And we're going to talk about what that means in a minute, because I think that's just critical, this whole inflammation issue.
I agree.
But so Elizabeth and I, we looked at my results, and we came up with a, I'll call it a diet. It was how I was going to eat for the next month or so. And it basically, I counted it up, we had 26 foods on that list. And when I say food, that includes salt and pepper. I mean, there wasn't a lot on that list of things that I could safely eat, but I was fine with that. So for the next month, actually, I may have gone 2 months, over Thanksgiving and Christmas, it can be done, I ate these 26 foods to the exclusion of anything else to get my gut healed. I threw in, then Elizabeth kind of offhand suggested this probiotic thing that she said had helped her. I threw that in the mix, and I've had maybe 3 bad days since the first of the year. And for those of you who have chronic illnesses or gut issues, you know what a bad day is. You know, I used to have bad days every day, and I have only had maybe 3 or 4. And I know why, because I was bad. I ate things that I knew I shouldn't have, or I accidentally ate things that I shouldn't have. I even was on this diet when I got married. And,
right.
You know, you can do it. I did it Thanksgiving, Christmas, and when I got married. So anyway, so that's the end of my story, is that my life has changed. But through the journey that I had, I mean, my life changed significantly when I discovered the wheat connection. Then when I discovered the soy connection, again, it took a dramatic step forward. So, you know, there's kind of, if you have chronic illnesses, and I need to shut up and let Elizabeth get back on, but I'm going to say this, but if you do have chronic issues, that you really can start small and start experimenting with this to see if, wow, that really, you know, if it resonates with you, if you're feeling the effects in your body, and then at some point you'll probably want to jump in and say, okay, I got to know the whole story. So anyway, Elizabeth, let's talk about the inflammation, what that means.
Okay. So what happens, what I'm talking about, is not necessarily what you might think of as a typical traditional allergy. So we're all very familiar with people who, when they eat peanuts, they go into anaphylaxis and they have trouble breathing, their throat all closes up. You can tell, and eventually, if it's not interfered with, they can die. So, like, typical things that cause anaphylaxis might be peanuts, for some people shellfish, things like that. So that's called a type 1 hypersensitivity. And that's, you know when you have that, because you have this really scary thing, and it gets worse and worse every time that you eat that thing and you stay away from those, and maybe you even carry EpiPens. It can happen with bee stings, too, things like that. When you go in deeper into different types of hypersensitivity reactions, we move on and we find, well, you can have a hypersensitivity reaction that causes not an anaphylactic reaction, but that causes the creation of antibodies in your blood. And we have tests that look for those antibodies, IgG, IgE, things like that, and we can see those, and often those will manifest also in different ways. But what's been frustrating for a lot of people, like you, Jennifer, is that you have these symptoms, and maybe you even got these allergy tests, but they didn't turn up any helpful antibodies.
Yeah, I had pineapple and egg whites. That's all that ever showed up.
Right.
In the other tests that I'd had, yeah.
In the other antibody tests. So those are the traditional tests. If you go to see an allergist at a hospital, those are the tests that they will give to you, the scratch test, the blood test. So they're going to look for antibodies in your blood. Now, the problems with those tests is that not all hypersensitivity reactions cause the creation of antibodies. And sometimes those antibodies exist, but you don't have a reaction to that food. So it's kind of a false positive or even a false negative. Like you had a lot of false negatives, because if it only turned up pineapple and what was the other thing?
Egg whites.
Egg whites. Obviously, we know there's a lot more going on in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So when we found this test, out of Cygnet called the MRT, the mediator release test. This was really revolutionary for me to change my thinking. What this test looks for is not the antibody creation, which may or may not happen and may or may not indicate a hypersensitivity reaction, but what it looks for is, does it cause the blood cells to release histamines or cytokines? There's about 30, 40, 50 of these kines type mediators are called. And so we all know what happens when you have a histamine reaction in your body. Usually we have it in our nose when we get a cold and our nose gets really swollen in the nasal passages and stuffy. And then we take maybe an antihistamine and it stops. So the antihistamine, actually the medication goes and blocks those histamine receptors and stops the inflammatory response. Well, when we're eating food and we have a hypersensitivity, a type 4 hypersensitivity reaction, it releases those histamine-type mediators, and they can go all over anywhere in the body. So they can go to your bowels, to your stomach. They can be in your brain, like we see with my son with his red food dyes. They can be in your muscles, like in fibromyalgia. They can be anywhere. They can manifest anywhere in your body. And I think that for each person, it kind of settles in its own location. So
that's
maybe
I think it's mm-hmm. always been really interesting is my weakness is my gut, but my husband gets sinus headaches all the time. And I'm thinking, mm-hmm. you know, they're caused by the same general, you know, some people get migraines and some people
exactly.
get sniffles and some people, we had a question, you know, muscle aches. You know, so I know when I eat something bad, my right shoulder aches, you know.
Oh, interesting.
But I think that everybody has a weakness, and so the same, I mean, when my gut hurts and you have a migraine, it's the same cause, right? It's this inflammation.
It can be, absolutely. They can both be tracked back to food. So as I was studying let me finish with this, how this works. So what happens is whatever you're eating causes the blood to release these histamine-type mediators, and it can cause widespread inflammatory response through your body, which can cause swelling in your brain, which can cause migraines, headaches, sinus issues, can cause mood, attention deficit, hyperactivity, behavioral issues. It can cause swelling, inflammation anywhere in your body that you can see. So for me, when I was studying for this exam and I learned about this type 4 hypersensitivity reaction, and I thought, wow, this is really fascinating because this is saying that your food can not only cause inflammatory response all over your body systemically, but it can happen in a delayed sort of fashion. So it can happen even up to 4 days later, you can have mm-hmm. this inflammatory response. With my son, for example, when we keep him on his safe foods, he does great. But as soon as he eats something that he shouldn't, that's on his sensitivity list, I will see 48 hours later that he's completely constipated. Mm-hmm. So constipated that I can give him 6 X-lax. He weighs 50 pounds. I can give him 6 X-lax and nothing will come through. So his inflammation really settles into his colon, and it becomes totally inflamed, so inflamed nothing will come through. There is no way to get it through. However, if I bring him back and he's back on his safe foods, within 24 hours it's completely cleared without any other intervention, and he's now flowing freely. So it can be delayed.
Your poor kid. He's going to have to, you know.
He's a trooper. He's been through a lot.
Well, I mean, then he has to, you know, you're telling everybody his personal bathroom.
Oh, yes.
Habits,
I don't think
so.
He'll listen to this one. Luckily, he's only 8. He really doesn't care what I say.
Yeah, and he's a boy. He doesn't care.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, for him, this has been quite a journey, too, of us. Mm-hmm. And I've had to have his buy-in for this because his diet has had to change radically, and he has had to participate in this. He's not around me all the time. He goes to school, he goes to camp, all those things, sleepovers, and he needs to be aware of what is safe for him to eat and how it's going to affect him when it doesn't. And we point it out all the time when something like this happens, and I'll say, okay, you're constipated today. What did you eat 2 days ago? And we will go through and we will always be able to identify it, what the problem food was. So the fact that it can be delayed by up to 4 days, hypersensitivity type 4 reactions can also be dose dependent. So sometimes if you eat that one corn chip yesterday, you're going to be fine. But let's say you ate a whole basket of corn chips 3 days later, now you might be sick. Or maybe you ate a bunch of corn chips one day and you were fine, and then you ate a bunch of corn chips the second day, or you ate it the second day with tomatoes and you're also sensitive to tomatoes.
See, that's what would happen to me is I thought Fritos were a safe food, a safe snack for me. And so I'd eat them, I'd buy a bag, you know, and I'd eat half of them and I'd be like, okay, I'm all right. And then I'd finish the bag the next day and it would wipe me out. And I was like, well, shoot, I thought Fritos, you know, I thought they were safe.
Right, and you're a good example of someone who went gluten-free, and a lot of the gluten-free products are made with corn. And
or
so
soy.
If you are, right, or soy. So if you are sensitive to corn or soy, and you're going gluten-free, and you're just looking for products that say gluten-free or wheat-free on them, you may not be doing yourself any favors.
You
may not be getting better still. So you figure, well, it must not be wheat or gluten, and so I must be fine with that. And then you add it back in because, of course, it didn't make any difference for you. Very frustrating. I loved it when you said earlier.
No, go ahead.
I loved it when you said earlier that now you found foods that are safe for you to eat. Because I think a lot of people who are in your condition have a hard time. They start narrowing their diet, narrow, to the point where they find only those couple foods that they feel safe eating. And then they become nutrient deficient and feel very deprived and all sorts of things happen.
Well, I would have been happy to have been nutritionally deprived if I could just, and what's funny is what I was calling my safe foods turns out weren't. Salmon and tuna and sushi. I mean, I lived on that thinking it was a safe food. And and now that I've been on the safe diet for, I don't know how long, 4 or 5 months, if I do, I think, I can have some salmon, and I'll eat it, and I feel crummy, which I hate. But, you know, that's just the way it is, and I'd rather feel good than feel crummy, even if it means I can't have sushi, and I'll live with that. We did have a comment come in from a good friend of mine, actually, who's gone through this with me sort of over the last several years, and something we might touch on is a lot of women particularly, they hit 35, and they start gaining weight, they start having symptoms, they start having all these issues that they blame on being 35, being 40, being 45. Oh, I hit 50, I couldn't lose weight anymore. Oh, it's menopause, it's perimenopause. It's all of these things, so they go to the doctor and they get all these drugs and pills, and, you know, they're never quite satisfied with their results, but they think, well, you know, it's just inevitable as you age. And one of the things that I found fascinating is I'm 44. I just turned 44. I'm thinner than I've ever been in my life. I feel better than I've ever felt in my life, and I have more energy. And that has been the case for the last 4 or 5 years. So don't tell me that once you hit 40 and you're in perimenopause or whatever that your life suddenly goes to hell. What I'm thinking, and tell me, Elizabeth, if you agree with this, is that as you get older, your tolerance to these food sensitivities decreases, I guess would be the right word, and to
right,
a point
so.
That they affect you stronger. And so, yeah, at 35, you're eating the same foods. You are going to gain weight and have more trouble losing it. You are going to feel worse. You are going to have menopausal symptoms because you're just filling up your trash can, as an acupuncturist said once.
Which is a great analogy. We each have a toxic threshold in our bodies, and for each individual, it's different. So what that means is that toxic threshold can hold all of the toxins we're exposed to in our environment, in our nail polish, that we breathe in the air and the smog, that we get through the chlorine that comes out of our water faucet, that all of the toxins that come through our environment. And then you add in all of the toxins that come through our food, the pesticides, the hormones that are injected into our livestock, the fertilizers that are coming in, all of these, and the genetic modifications, who knows what they're doing. So all of these things go into basically your body's toxic load.
Even the foods that just simply don't suit your body, even if they're technically, quote-unquote healthy.
Right. Well, I think that some people have a genetic predisposition toward being more hypersensitive than others.
Mm-hmm.
So for that reason alone, maybe, their body stops having oral tolerance, it's called. Oral tolerance is how your stomach handles the food item that comes down into your body and how much it can tolerate of it before it sends out a hypersensitivity reaction, this mediator release or an antibody formation, basically an immune system reaction causing an inflammatory response. So if you have already built up your toxic threshold, your oral tolerance threshold is going to be lower too, because you're just not going to have as many resources left to draw on to handle these multitude of things that are coming into your body at all sides. I think it's all connected. I think that all the toxins that come into our body have a cumulative mm-hmm. effect. And so some people, you can go through into your 30 to your 40. Sometimes some people, it affects them when they're teens, when, as my son, at birth. You don't know when that oral tolerance threshold is going to be reached, or even the whole overall toxic threshold is going to be reached. But when you reach it and when you cross over that threshold, to get down back below it is much harder. You have to make much more effort to clear out the things that were causing that inflammatory response to get down below your threshold level. Now, the guy who runs the Celiac Disease Research Center out of the University of Maryland, his name is Alessio Fasano, very, very big doctor in celiac. This is like the big celiac center in the U.S. And he wrote this really fascinating article in Scientific American in which he said that he really believes that most, if not all, autoimmune diseases, of which celiac disease is also an autoimmune disease, and I believe this carries over to people who are having chronic distress like you, Jennifer, mm-hmm. have three factors in common. The first factor is that they have a genetic predisposition toward being hypersensitive. So immediately I thought, wow, all of my MS doctors have always asked me, does anyone in your family tree have MS? And I've always said, well, no, nobody's ever had MS in my family. But had they asked me, does anybody in your family have chronic distress? And I would have said, wow, you know what? My mother has IBS and migraines. My aunt has fibromyalgia. My uncle has Crohn's disease. My cousin has debilitating migraines. On my other side, we have scleroderma, we have Guillain-Barré, all these autoimmune diseases. I'm like, wow, it's like a given that I'm genetically predestined to being hypersensitive, and my son too. So that's the first factor, he says. The second factor is the environmental stimuli. For celiac sufferers, if you remove the wheat gluten, they're no longer sick. They're totally healthy. So with other people who suffer from food and chemical sensitivities, if you pull those elements out of their life, out of their diet, they're no longer suffering. They're no longer sick. So you're always going to be a hypersensitive person, if that's genetically predetermined, but you can keep yourself healthy by staying away from the things that make you sick. I thought this was absolutely enlightening. The third factor that he said was common to most, if not all, autoimmune diseases, and I believe that carries over to other forms of chronic physical distress, is an unusually leaky gut. So you may have heard about leaky gut before, maybe not in the mainstream medical establishment, but certainly in the alternative medical establishment, it's well known what leaky gut is. So what happens with leaky gut is that you have an inflammatory process happening in your body that causes the cells that are lining the walls of your stomach and bowels to become inflamed and therefore cause gaps in between them. So whereas when you think of the stomach muscle should be a really smooth muscle with nothing, you shouldn't even be able to see the individual cells in that muscle. They're so tightly joined. But when it becomes inflamed, especially chronically inflamed, those cells separate. And now large undigested particles of food can pass through into the bloodstream and cause more inflammatory immune reactions. So leaky gut is a big deal. When I work with people to determine what their food sensitivities are and how we can best help heal them, I take this into account, and I usually want to work with them, like with you, we want to bring back some of the natural fauna and flora with the probiotics, and the right one I think is important. But even more than that, I like to work with digestive enzymes, plant-based digestive enzymes. What that does is that helps break that food down so that there are no longer those large particles of undigested food that can go through that leaky gut area and cause more inflammatory response. And it also takes the pressure off of the pancreas and the other enzymatic systems in your body to figure out the figure out the digestive processes. When something comes down into your stomach that you eat, you have these little hairs on the inside of your stomach called villi, and they sense it, they feel it, and they say, okay, well, what is this, and what kind of enzymes do I need to call for from the pancreas, from the liver, to help digest this? Well, we can, when you have chronic inflammation in the bowels, those villi get flattened down and smashed, and now they're no longer able to do their job well, and they can't really sense what's in there. So the enzymes don't get manufactured, or maybe the wrong ones get manufactured. You have a lot of stress being put on. Maybe you have an overabundance of insulin. This can cause a diabetic reaction, things like that. So if we add in the correct digestive enzymes, we can help mitigate that response and allow the healing to happen. If when we do that together with the LEAP diet, it's called, which is a diet created, it's tailor-made, customized for your body based on your test results, created out of only safe foods, then together those two things can have tremendous healing on a body.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are able to come back and reintroduce things later that they had to take out of their lives for a while.
And even if you can't, I'll tell you, it's worth it. It just, I talk to a lot of people. I mean, I have for 15 years. I've talked about my diet, and people will say, I could never do that. I could never give up X, whatever it is. And
mm-hmm.
when people say that to me, I know they're not ready, because
mm-hmm.
I know how awful I felt, and I know how much I wanted to be thin. Now, I mean, I'm not going to, again, this is not a weight loss kind of thing, but being 20 pounds overweight is very irritating, and I wanted to be, 20 pounds lighter, and I wanted that with all my heart. But when people will say, well, I could never give up X to achieve that goal, okay, that's fine. You're not ready.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that, one, to feel good 90% of the time, and two, to be at a comfortable weight without, too much drama about it, or any drama about it, it's worth giving up bagels. It's worth giving up pizza for. It's even worth giving up beer, although I can drink gluten-free beer, which is wonderful. But it is worth it, to feed your body the nutrients it wants and can use. And, I'll never eat pizza again, ever. And that's okay. Believe me, I can live without pizza to feel good and look good. So.
Right. Well, we certainly don't eat real pizza in our house either. We'll never get pizza delivery again. But
mm-hmm.
I make creative pizza all the time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, just this week I made a pizza crust out of chickpea flour and water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, unless you are sensitive to chickpeas, and some people are, but
mm-hmm.
a lot of people are not, you could easily make this pizza. And it was delicious, I have to say. So
yeah.
What we do, and that's one of the things, I'm glad you brought that point up, because
mm-hmm.
one of the things we do in the therapy is that we talk about recipes, we talk about products that you can tolerate, we design what you can eat for breakfast and lunch and dinner, and all sorts of menu suggestions and ideas so that you don't feel deprived and you don't have to feel
mm-hmm.
like you're missing out on life.
I really enjoy
it. Better.
It was kind of fun. Yeah. I mean, when you're feeling better and even with my 26 foods, I was able to come up with, quite a few combinations that were good. One thing I wanted to get back to the inflammation thing and maybe this is one of those, TMI moments, too much information, but what the
uh-huh.
heck, we're all friends here. Right. But is I had always, when my stomach was hurting, I call it my stomach hurting. It wasn't my stomach. It was my gut. But
uh-huh.
I had always felt, I called it the brick in my gut. I always felt like there was just this weight, this heavy ick, and I could never do anything about it. But what I told a doctor once, and this was a naturopath guy, but he didn't, I said, I feel like I can feel my food digesting and it hurts. Like the inside of my small or large intestine, whatever, is inflamed, and I use those words, and that it hurts as food's traveling through, and he just looked at me like I was crazy. And
mm-hmm.
then when you and I started talking, it and again, this is maybe one of those too much information moments, but I had discovered in the last couple of years that when I was having that pain, I could push on my abdomen, you know, pretty aggressively, and suddenly I'd feel better. I mean, I would almost, it was almost like a pop, and suddenly I would feel better. And I didn't know why. I couldn't explain it. I didn't know why. I even asked another doctor that. I said, now when I push, you know, it feels better. And he just said, well, you must be having spasms in your gut that are being, I'm like, no, I'm not having spasms. But then in talking to you, I realized, I think, anyway, I don't know, I haven't looked, but that there's probably areas, and I can identify where they are now, that are probably chronically inflamed, which means they're swollen, they're painful. And if I push on that, it's almost like unclogging a drain or something, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a rush of relief that it's, I mean, my head clears. It's the coolest thing. And I haven't had to do that in several, I mean, like maybe once in the last 3 or 4 weeks, which is great. I used to do it 4 or 5 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's that literal. When we're talking about inflammation, it's that literal.
It can be. Although I don't want everyone to go around and say, well, I don't see any signs of inflammation in my body.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't always see it.
Right.
Like for me, I noticed that when I took out the foods that were causing me inflammation, I lost kind of that puffy look.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like there always seemed to be like a little bit of extra skin and something over my muscles, and
mm-hmm.
even though I was very fit and in good shape, I still looked very puffy.
You're kind of waterlogged.
Yeah, yeah. So, but inflammation, as I said before, can take a lot of different forms, and it could be in the brain. It could be in your sinus passages. You know, it could be causing you to have a drippy nose all the time. It could be all sorts of different factors. It may not be what you might think of as inflammation or even as pinpointed as what you've been able to locate.
Well, and I guess one place I was going with that is that we're talking about food and your gut, and I want to reiterate that it happens to be food and my gut that hurts.
Mm-hmm.
But like you're saying, I mean, it can be food and you know, the inflammation be other places. Like that one commercial, I don't know if you've seen it, for the sinus, it's like a sinus issue, and it says it's not mucus up there, it's swollen tissues.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you're hurting, which is sort of a like, oh, wow, it's not just a bunch of snot.
Right.
It's swollen. And
the snot comes later.
yeah. You're not sniffly because you're, you know, stuffed up. You're sniffly because you're swollen. And
you're,
so,
right, and you're... The snot comes because it's a way for your body to evacuate the toxins that it's finding
mm-hmm.
in the system. It's trying to mm-hmm. flush the bad things out. So, but it's not.
Another thing
not
I wanted
itself.
To mention that you just brought up that has been life changing for me is the water retention. I don't have the credentials, and I should just shut up and let Elizabeth say these, but I can't help myself. Is for me. When I eat something inflammatory, I'll gain 8 pounds overnight. I mean, literally 8 pounds overnight. Now, did I gain 8 pounds of fat? No, I didn't. I gained 8 pounds of water because my body's inflamed, it's irritated, and it's protecting itself. And then when I get back on my safe diet, I mean, I'll pee like a racehorse, you know, because it's just all of this water in my body as it's healing being released. And then, like you, I don't have puffy. My body doesn't look puffy. I don't exercise much, and my muscles are fairly well defined because
mm-hmm.
I don't have that layer of water on me.
People should know that you are one of those people who weigh themselves every day.
Mm-hmm.
So that they know that, in fact, Jennifer called me one time or emailed me while we were going through the initial phases and said, I strayed from my diet last night and had what I thought would be a safe dinner of a sweet potato. Now, a
mm-hmm.
sweet potato sounds very innocuous. Do you remember this, Jennifer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she said, I woke up the next morning and had gained 5 pounds from a sweet potato.
Mm-hmm.
So it just goes to show that even though something we think of as innately healthy, like a sweet potato, how much healthier could you get than that kind of food, cannot be healthy for everybody. It's very individual. It's so customized. It drives me crazy when people make blanket statements that say, everybody should go off weed and berry or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know what? First of all, you're asking a huge amount from somebody. You know how hard it is to take gluten out of your diet. I mean, it takes a big effort. In our society, our food is based around wheat in this country. Mm-hmm. So I try not to do that recklessly, because mm-hmm. that's asking a tremendous amount. And then when somebody goes through all of that effort and still doesn't get better, mm-hmm. then they get very frustrated and they give up on the whole thing. And I don't want to see that happen, because I really believe that food is intimately connected with health, mm-hmm. and they cannot be separated. So if you feel like there's something that your body is not functioning the way it should optimally, then there's a chance that something you're eating or are regularly exposed to is causing your problems.
I know you have a lot more you want to talk about, and of course I always do, but we have a bunch of questions on here.
Excellent.
On the webcast. So I was thinking about taking a break, going to some of these, and then we'll do our little giveaway here in a few minutes. But, okay, tell us again, the name of the test, the blood test, okay. is what?
So the blood test is out by a company called Signet out of Florida, and you have to do it through a Signet-certified therapist, which is called LEAP, L-E-A-P, L-E-A-P, Lifestyle Enhancement and Performance, it stands for therapist, like myself. And what we do is I work with people all over the country. As long as you can go, I will send you the kit, and you take it to your local phlebotomist, and they draw your blood into the kit, which is then FedExed out overnight to Florida. It doesn't matter where you're located. You don't have to be anywhere near where I live. Signet runs its 150 tests on the blood and checks all these 150 common foods and chemicals that are chemical additives, I should say, food additives, things that are in our food, like aspartame, like food dyes, all these things. So they check these things all out, and then they send the results back to both of us. And we go through them, and we use those results to do cross-correlations of food families and design safe diets. And then I bring you through. I work with you for months, bringing you up to safe places and to the point where, like Jennifer mentioned, now if she has something that is not safe for her, she knows it right away, because she's not mm-hmm. constantly reacting all the time. Once you get to a safe place where you're not constantly in a reactive state, you can tell very clearly when you eat something that doesn't agree with you. So the test is called the MRT Mediator Release Test, and it's out through Signet, and you have to go through a Signet-certified therapist to have it done, who will then send you to a phlebotomist to draw your blood.
Mm-hmm. Which is like $15. Sherry, my good friend Sherry, she wants to know if you think, is there a connection between infant colic and lifelong food sensitivities, do you think?
You know, there certainly was a connection between colic and food sensitivities in my son. He had tremendous projectile vomiting. I have a lot of clients, one of my focus is in pediatrics, and I do have a lot of clients whose children start out as colicky babies and then progress to the point where as two-year-olds they're chronically constipated, picky eaters sometimes. Often children will stop eating a lot of things because they know that they feel yucky when they eat. So I see a lot of kids who are low birth weight, who have kind of failure to thrive things, and often it can be related to food sensitivities. Enough. The Chinese believe that children's digestive systems take the first 6 years of life to fully mature, and I think they have a point there.
Let's see, what was the name of the guy that the celiac expert that came up with the three connection.
His name is Alessio, A-L-E-S-S-I-O, Fasano, F-A-S-A-N-O. He's a medical doctor, but I think he has an Italian degree. I think he's Italian, although I'm not 100% sure about that, so I apologize, Alessio, if I'm saying something wrong. But he is the director of the Celiac Research Center at the University of Maryland. If you go to my website, elizabethyarnell.com/
she's on
food
the webcast,
sensitivity,
the link there.
Excellent. Then you'll see I quote him there, and you can get the spelling of his name and even a link to the Scientific American article that he wrote last year.
Lisa wants to know if a leaky gut can be diagnosed with a colonoscopy. She says her 15-year-old daughter has chronic stomach and gut issues. She had an endoscopy and colonoscopy last summer, and everything came back normal. The doctor diagnosed her with IBS. Hey, I did the same thing, and that's the only diagnosis anyone ever came up with was IBS, and I think that's just a, like, we don't know what's wrong with you.
Right. Right. So a syndrome, whenever they say syndrome, so IBS is irritable bowel syndrome, and anytime something is called a syndrome in medicine, it means a bunch of unrelated symptoms that they cannot find a relationship between. And typically, you will be considered as having IBS if, like Jennifer, you have a lot of gut pain, you maybe have a lot of diarrhea, or maybe it's a lot of constipation. Can a leaky gut be diagnosed with an endoscopy or a colonoscopy? Maybe, if the cells are inflamed at the time of the procedure. I never recommend those for people because I feel like it is an unnecessary, uncomfortable, invasive procedures to have when all I need to do is hear your symptomology and hear your history to tell you, you know what, you have irritable bowel syndrome. And I think you're going to agree with that if that fits you. And this particular test through Cygnet, now Cygnet has been doing this for about 10 years. They have an incredibly high, over 90% success rate with IBS.
That's what I wanted to – thank you for saying that. For those of you who are interested in this, you can Google the MRT, the mediator release, whatever. I did that, of course, thinking, okay, I'm going to hear a bunch of – comments about how this is a, you know, this is quackery, this is nonsense, this is, you know, how you do if you're in alternative health and you look up things, you know, like colonics or whatever it is you're interested in, and you hear all of this stuff about how fake it is and what a scam it is. You won't find that with the MRT. That was what made me decide to do it, was the comments that came back were probably 80% positive. Like, you know, no, actually, this is the real thing.
It's true. And one of the things I love about this is that even though I am a natural health practitioner, and that's what I really follow, this is science. This is hard science. This is a laboratory test. So it combines the hard science with the more maybe intuitive or natural approach to healing. It's all food. If you are already on medications with your doctor, I don't address those at all. That is between you and your medical doctor, and I'm not going to touch them. We're going to go with you as you are and try to heal you through food. And that's it.
So, yeah, thank you. I wanted to throw that in there because I just – that was the deciding factor for me. Sorry, Elizabeth, you were very persuasive, but, you know.
no,
I
and I want
and I was
you to
stunned.
Do that.
Yeah, I was stunned at how the Google community was in support of this concept. Okay, let's see. Rosacea? You think
rosacea, you know, that's very interesting. Sometimes I think rosacea can be – I actually think rosacea, and if you notice your rosacea and when you have flare-ups more than other times, can definitely be affiliated with what you're eating and what's in your environment. And if you have a skin issue like rosacea, I typically – deal with it on several fronts, which we start with assessing your overall health, and we would do the blood test and create a new diet for you. But we would also work maybe on what you're putting on your skin as well and other sorts of toxins in your environment. I have a client now with psoriasis and doing much, much better.
Okay.
Her lifelong, 25 years, she's been battling this.
One question I meant to mention this earlier is it said this person says, my son is severely allergic to dogs and cats. Are there any dietary treatments available? I was actually going to mention that I became allergic, very allergic to cats at about 35. And I think it's related. It's not that there's a treatment for allergies. It's your toxic load, right?
I agree. I think that your toxic load can definitely affect it. I have not actually seen those kinds of allergies to dogs and cats are airborne allergies, so they don't come into your stomach and be digested. I have seen good success with those through a therapy called Natural Allergy Elimination Therapy, NAET. I think that if you are a hypersensitive person, then you will, odds are high that you probably have food sensitivities too that you may not notice because the other ones are so much more overwhelming. But if you are a hypersensitive person and you have those kinds of allergies, you will be hypersensitive in other ways too. So will the leap?
Sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. Did you find that you're no longer allergic to cats?
Well, I'm not sure, but I do. I know that when I was eating, the first time I noticed it was when I was doing a whole wheat diet or a whole grain diet, and I suddenly couldn't even be around people with cats because I think my immune system was so compromised by eating all that wheat and all those whole grains, which my body just can't tolerate, that my immunity was just at the, you know, it was very low. That's what I found. And so that now I can be around cats. I don't think they bother me that much. But if I were to, you know, if I were feeling crummy already because of my diet, I think I probably couldn't be around cats, if that makes sense.
I would think so, too. And I see just in general, people become healthier and stronger in their health, more robust, more vibrant, and able to withstand other toxic assaults, whether that might be cat dander or what it is.
Tina wants to know, and she says she's looking for an MRT therapist, and she can't find one in her area. You don't really, I mean, you don't need one in your area. I don't know how many there are around the country, but it's not something you have to do face-to-face. Elizabeth and I have never met, so, you know, you don't need to have one in your area. You can get your blood drawn by somebody there. Clearly, that's going to have to happen face-to-face.
Right.
But otherwise, you can work with, you know, Elizabeth or, you know.
Right.
To do this, and you don't ever have to be face-to-face. So.
There are over 300 LEAP therapists. They are all registered dietitians, and then there's me. So they all have a more of a registered dietitian approach, possibly. But a lot of them have offices in different parts of the country, and if you feel more comfortable walking in to see somebody in their office, then I'd certainly be happy to refer you to somebody. But I do see clients all over the country. We do it by email and by phone or by Skype if you prefer. So it doesn't really matter. As long as you live somewhere where you have overnight FedEx service to Florida, you can work with me.
So let's see. I have some people say, now, wait a minute, what's that company and what is it? If you go to Elizabeth's website and there's a couple links on the webcast screen, you can get directly where you need to go. I've got some people Googling and saying, it's taking me to weird places. I don't know what's going on. So you can go to Elizabeth's website and then find what you need. Julie says, my daughter's been diagnosed with gastroparesis. Do you know of any correlation with this? I don't know what that is. So,
I think that, yes, there could absolutely be a correlation. That is basically problems in your gastrointestinal tract, just to kind of put it in layman's terms. But yes, anything that's having to do with that tract, I think, can be tracked back and absolutely helped, if not cured. I always hesitate to say cure because I just want to say helped and managed by changing your diet.
Karen comments that, you know, the Atkins diet has helped her most with her food sensitivities, and for me too. It really does seem to be the best for me. And she says, and I think we may have addressed this, she says, I hope you'll share the cost of all this along with other important information. So, you know, one of the things that Elizabeth and I wanted to get to that we're not going to have time, but I'll mention it very quickly, is, you know, to do the blood test, which is really pretty cool. But if you're not ready for that, I get that. I totally get that. You can experiment with some of the more common allergens and see if you see a difference. For me, you know, wheat was the first thing I eliminated. I saw an enormous difference, which to me put the connection in my head between food and how I was feeling. Wheat is a huge allergen or, you know, sensitivity for a lot of people. So if you eliminate it from your diet and 4 days later you've lost 5 pounds and you're feeling good, well, bingo, you know, we've got something. You know, there are other common allergens, you know, the soy, the corn, the dairy. You know, I mean, you could spend the next, as I did, 15 years, you know, figuring out all the different things that you're sensitive to. And you won't get them all, but it is a journey. And if you're quote-unquote lucky and the first thing you try eliminating, let's say that's wheat, just for fun, and you feel fantastic, well then, you know, you've got a piece of the puzzle solved. And it may be that that's all you ever need to do is just be gluten-free, you know, and live the rest of your life without gluten. There are plenty of substitutes. I haven't had wheat in probably 10 years, and I'm just fine.
Traditionally, if you were having gastrointestinal problems and you went to a natural health doctor, they might put you on an elimination diet, which would mean traditionally they would bring you down to where you are eating usually something like chicken, rice, and pears, which are considered to be very non-allergenic, for 2 weeks, and then you would start one by one adding foods in and seeing if you had any reaction. The problem with that, for instance, is I have one client who's sensitive to chicken, rice, and pear.
Oh, my.
So for her, right, for her, that would have been a nightmare. She would never have come down. She would have done all of this work and had all this deprivation and all of this effort and never been able to come to a safe place. So then she probably would have concluded that it wasn't food that was causing her problems.
You have two or three different services that you offer, right? You have the urinalysis.
Mm-hmm. That's an enzyme deficiency. So for people like you who feel like they love the Atkins diet because it doesn't have a lot of carbs and you have a hard time digesting carbs, which is you, Jennifer, those are people who absolutely need digestive enzymes. If you cannot digest carbs, that is telling you right then that you are missing some digestive enzymes in your body when you need them. And so I never advocate that someone should go completely carb-free because it is not healthy. You need carbs in your body to provide energy for your cells. So we just try to find the right carbs, and then I like to add in the right digestive enzymes to help you digest them so that they don't make you sicker. As far as the costs, the standard cost for the LEAP MRT test plus what turns out to be almost unlimited counseling for the next couple months is about $795. And there are several payment plans. You can divide it up into three monthly payments. There's a couple different ways you can do it. Now, if you add in, and often I do hope that you will consider adding in a urinalysis to determine the enzymatic activity that you are missing. This is all laboratory analysis, completely customized to you specifically, your body, not the general population. This is for you. And when I work with people with these things, I tell them, throw out everything you thought you knew about food and what was healthy for you because it is not right for you. Maybe the general population shouldn't eat deep-fried foods, but for you, if you are doing it with your safe foods and your safe oils, that shouldn't be a problem. So just, you know, we have to start over and have a whole new foundation for what you believe is healthy and what you know is good for your body. So that's an additional fee. I don't even remember off the top of my head, somewhere around $200. But you get a discount if you order it together with the MRT testing because they go together. And then I have some other services that I feel some people are indicated for. Some people I'd like to start off with a parasite cleanse because there are really tremendous numbers of people walking around with parasitic infections in their body that are undiagnosed. And our medical diagnoses of parasites, which is often through a stool sample, is notorious for false negatives, doesn't pick up a lot of the parasites that maybe aren't residing in the stools or maybe are encapsulated or otherwise inactive. We can have parasites that live in our muscles and our brains, all sorts of things, and it's not uncommon to have a parasitic infection that could be causing a lot of your problems. And a lot of people who become intolerant to food and have chronic IBS, it starts because they have a parasitic infection that is causing them chronic irritation. So sometimes we wipe out the parasites first, and then we move on to the food and the dietary management. It really depends, and that's why I offer a free half-hour consultation with everyone who is interested in this before you sign up, because I want to talk to you first to see, A, are you a good candidate for this? Do I think this can help you? If I don't think this can help you, I don't want to take your money and put you through all of this. Certainly not. B, are you committed to regaining your health? Because if you feel like you can't start preparing your own food, at least to some extent, you probably are not a good candidate to do this. If you eat every single meal at a restaurant and you insist that you must continue to do that, then I have to say, well, good luck to you, because we can't control what goes into that kind of food and I can't help you. So I want to talk to you, and I offer everyone a free half-hour consultation before they actually sign up to do that. Then I offer a whole bunch of other services and products on my site that you can check out.
If you're brand new to the idea of food sensitivities, this may seem like overkill, and that's just fine. You know, it'll be here next year. It'll be here the year after that.
Yep.
If you've been struggling, like I think a lot of people on the call probably have been, that's why you're on the call, because it's something of interest to you. It is sort of a, okay, let's figure this out once and for all. You know, instead of trying, okay, I'm going to go get I'm going to try colonics, or I'm going to try raw foods, or I'm going to try this or that, not knowing if it's going to work for you or not. Some of us need to go through that journey. Some of you may feel the need to do it yourself, and that's absolutely fine. I did it for 15 years. But if you're at the point of saying, okay, I just want to know, it's been pretty wonderful for me. So.
Yep, I would agree. And if you're at the point where you're ready to be healthy and you're ready to make a change, this is not an overnight solution. This is no magic pill that you can take and tomorrow you'll feel better. This is a over lifetime way of living and eating. And you will see it becomes part of you, and you don't even really miss these things after a while often. And you find the things that you're happy that you can eat and that you're good, and your shopping list becomes full of your new staple products. And life goes on, but you're happier and you're healthier and you feel better and you usually look better, all of that. And I have to say, Jennifer, you mentioned that you're 44 and you thought, you know, well, maybe this is just my kind of middle-aged weight gain. But I had the same experience that I had weight. I had a hard time getting off after my last child was born. 4 years, I was still struggling, even though I was working out regularly 4 times a week, and I was very fit and strong. And I figured, well, I guess this is just the way my body is going to look now. And then when I changed my diet based on the sensitive foods that I was eating, I dropped effortlessly 17 pounds, and it stayed off. It's now been 2 years.
Yeah, that really, I mean, even if you just want to lose weight, it's more sensitive.
Right.
It really is, because it just, I eat as much as I want of my safe foods, and, you know, I don't gain weight. It's really, really pretty wonderful. So, all right, I'm going to, let's go ahead and wrap this up since we've been going 90 minutes. Hey, I hope this was helpful. I know it's something I can talk about all day long, and I know Elizabeth can too, but we've probably worn out our welcome here a little bit. So if you have questions for me or Elizabeth, I know both of us would be delighted to, you know, to answer them for you, and that's all I have. So,
thanks for having me on your show, Jennifer.
Thanks, Elizabeth. I really appreciate your insight. Everybody, thanks for coming, and we'll all be in touch with you soon. Have a great day. Talk to you soon. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.